Hi, this is Take Charge Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye!
Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information. We give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back, welcome back. We have a special show today. I'm here with my co-host,
Carol Peterson.
And we're here today, the two of us. We're going to speak about what we're seeing in patients. It's a problem that's existed, but not to this degree prior to the COVID epidemic. What we are seeing is people who have this, it's different than chronic fatigue. It's whereas chronic fatigue has bone crushing fatigue, and often that is connected with a lot of pain, muscle pain, nerve pain, exhaustion, brain fog. What we're seeing in the COVID people is not so much post-COVID pain, at least I'm not seeing it, but what we're seeing is fatigue, we're seeing brain fog, and we're seeing this new syndrome of that is called nose blindness.
Nose blindness, where did you find that?
When I was researching the topic, that's what I found. They were, one time they'd call it lack of smell, the next time, and Sonia, the next time, nose blindness. So can you explain what this is, Carol, and where it's coming from? Or what's happening that so many people, they're losing their sense of smell for short periods of time, and some people, and so it'll come back, sense of smell and taste. And some people
often tied up with loss of taste too.
Yeah.
What's that called? Mouth blindness?
Tongue blindness.
Tongue blindness.
And so sometimes, so it could come back in a month, it could come back in a week, it could come back when the symptoms resolve, or it could maintain for longer periods of time, 3 months, 6 months to a year without responding and or coming back or even reducing. Sometimes it'll go away, and the next day it's back. Sometimes the sense of taste, of smell, will go away and you'll be aware that it's slowly coming back. It's unique to the individual. So, Carol, can you help us understand this phenomena?
So, it's been associated with viruses, antibiotic use, polyps in your nose, head injuries. Actually, I would say even in the case of some vaccinations, because those cranial facial nerves are affected and in strange ways. So when that happens, there's a lot going on. But zinc seems to be a really important component of this. And I want to share that we're getting some of this information from earthclinic.com. And I love Earth Clinic for a couple of things, because they try to bring forward home remedies people are using, but even better, they grade it. People go back and say if this worked or it didn't work. And I think we need something like that for every single thing we try. We have the computing power now. We need to put together sites that tell us what's worked for people and what doesn't. I know there's a few people doing that kind of work, and I think we'll see more of it. But this is one where they like to use natural remedies or old home remedies, and some things I'd never learn except for a place like this.
Well, you know what else I loved? The
what?
Remedies were from all over the world.
Yes, that's another thing.
Yeah, they're not local. They're not just local to the area or local to the states. They're from all over the world. People from all over the world are chiming in and sharing their voices and what they've seen in relationship to the response that they're getting from suggested or commented upon remedies. So go on. Explain a little more of this phenomenon to us, please.
About Earth Clinic or Anosia.
Anosia.
Anosmia. A-N-O-S-M-I-E. Anosmia.
Okay, I pronounced it wrong. Sorry. Anosmia.
Anosmia. I like that the nose is in there, so it's easy to remember. With COVID, this has come up many times, that people lose their smell. And actually, when you lose your smell, taste seems to go right along with it. Or even if you only lose your smell, it's really part of your enjoyment of food. Like I mentioned before, zinc seems to be tied up into this a bit. Low zinc, this is a symptom of not enough zinc. But it also can be precipitated by taking too much zinc, which I think is really interesting. I've heard this happen with people using zinc lozenges. For a time, they were taking zinc lozenges off the market because people using them were reporting this loss of smell. So they were actually using too much for their needs and precipitating another problem.
You know what, Carol? So let's define too much, because in the hospital right now, if you go in for COVID, they're giving you supplements. They're giving you vitamin D, 2,000. They're giving you vitamin C, 2,000. But they're also giving you zinc, 280 milligrams. That's an amazing, astoundingly high amount. So what is too much?
That amount of zinc is probably just fine with an acute situation when you're being observed. Actually, zinc is used for severe burn victims. And I remember the dosing being like 200 milligrams four times a day, just huge doses.
Wow.
But those people are burning through zinc. And on the other
Literally.
Hand, it really depends on what's going on relatively in your body. Other things affect this. I just love that one person posted about zinc, like you said, all over the world, Australia. She actually had lost her sense of smell from using a zinc lozenge. But she warns that copper and zinc are intimately linked. Right. So if you have too much zinc, you can create a relative copper deficiency. I like that she suggests eat something like oysters, which has both. And
well,
oysters have been traditionally, they're thought to be aphrodisiac because
of
actually
high
they're
zinc.
High in zinc. And zinc is involved in so many things.
But when you create a copper deficiency, let's discuss for 1 minute or 30 seconds, what that does. Copper is a natural anti-inflammatory. They used to give copper. It was called copper cupra aspirinate. When they discovered aspirin, they gave copper with it to bring down inflammation. So when you're using so much zinc that you're blocking your copper, or even chelating it out. One way to chelate out or remove excess copper is to build up your zinc. One way to remove excess zinc is to build up your copper. So, but when you're building up your zinc to a degree that it's chelating copper, you're reducing one of your natural mechanisms as an anti-inflammatory. Remember those copper bracelets we all used to wear?
Yeah, I still have them. And I decided it's a good idea.
Well, the new ones, because you used to get this green mark on your arm, and you constantly have this green mark on your arm. And the new ones now are sealed in the back, so the actual copper doesn't touch you. But the old ones had a copper that would be released. The green was the copper going into the skin, and it would, and people with, they'd give these copper bracelets to people with arthritis as a gift to them. Your old aunt or your cousin or someone would give you this. Here they said this was good for arthritis, and very often there'd be percentages decrease in inflammation and pain. So go on, Carol. Continue talking about zinc.
And I rather like the idea of bracelets because your body will take up what it needs rather than just guessing at a dose, which I think is rather nice. I think copper bracelets are a good idea. We've talked about zinc ionophores many times on this show.
Can you redefine it?
Zinc ionophores mean that this substance helps zinc get inside the cell where it's needed. So natural zinc ionophores are quercetin, green tea, and actually all kinds of polyphenols will do this as well. And all of the things that we're using for COVID that have come up, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, azithromycin, what am I missing? There's another big one. Colchicine even has been used. All of these are zinc ionophores.
They're pushing zinc into the cell where it can be utilized to block the virus.
Right. Another point I wanted to bring up with this Australian post is about iron. We had a show about excess iron, particularly in women. It's happening in men younger, but excess iron builds up. We excrete iron very weakly, but we can be taking it in a lot and have trouble getting rid of it. And one of the mechanisms for women was bleeding every month to get rid of excess iron. And once you stop bleeding, the incidence of stroke increases dramatically in women. And
it correlates that of males.
Right.
At that point. Formerly, males have a higher incidence of stroke, but when women stop their menses within a couple years, their incidence of stroke is a correlate or equal to males. Go on.
Right. And that's why some are recommended to go donate blood for the same reason. Men used to be cutting themselves up and getting food and fighting and whatever. And so it was a mechanism to save you from dying of too little iron to concentrate this iron. But we no longer quite need that. But this was really interesting to me because I had a high ferritin level myself, which I took steps to bring down. And she lists some very natural
ferritin is an iron.
Right. Ferritin is stored iron.
Okay.
So I love this. Cabbage, apple cider vinegar, and again, here we go, green tea, quercetin, lactoferrin I used, IP6 I used. So I thought cabbage was just incredible. So there's all these natural things you can be having in your life that really help you not have excess iron.
What she's saying is
the excess iron may contribute to the problems that also contribute to the loss of smell.
When I see elevated iron on a blood panel, because that's the only place you'll really see it, is I think of elevated, a little bit out of control depending on the level, inflammation. So it's interesting what you're saying in how important it is to chelate it or draw it out of the body. And when women aren't bleeding, it's very difficult to draw excess iron out of the body. So could you say that again, exactly what you used to draw the excess iron out of your body?
Oh, I use IP6, inositol phosphate. I also did some bleeding myself.
You gave blood?
I didn't go to the Red Cross. I have small veins, but I did go. I did go to a practitioner who did chelation, and had a chelation therapy, which can also help. But the commonly used EDTA is not a good iron chelator. It's a very modest iron chelator. But after the bag was emptied, we took the bag and dropped it to the floor. And then your blood goes back into the IV bag. And so I collected blood that way, and they just threw it away.
Sometimes I do that with my patients in the office, but I think I'll look at bags. Because I use syringes and just draw it out and choose to...
Very easy. I got this recommendation from another doctor.
So back to nose blindness.
Okay. How about one of my favorite things lately has been borax.
Yeah, you've talked about it a lot. Can you explain? Well, again, when we're using the borax, we're bringing down inflammation again. And
Antifungal. Like crazy. And that could be one of the problems with your loss of smell if you have a fungus infection taking over your sinuses. And I love what this person did. He did a neti pot, and he put borax in it. And borax, 20 mule team borax, is a good source of boron. If you get it in the health food store, you see small milligrams, 2 milligrams, 3 milligrams. But actually, if you're going for anti-inflammatory effect, you need a higher dose.
What dose, and approximate? 30 milligrams?
You'll get about 30 milligrams in about a quarter teaspoon of borax. I've been putting that in my coffee every morning. And my mom remarked that since I've got her bumped up in borax, that she's had a neuropathy tingling in her hands, that's gone away. And at one point,
that's remarkable.
She was being recommended to have carpal tunnel surgery. So
that's
really a comeback. And for my mom to admit something I told her works is a big deal for us.
Mothers.
So I want to give this recipe that here's from a Chinese practitioner. A full teaspoon of borax and a quarter teaspoon of sea salt in a neti pot. And a neti pot is this little Aladdin-shaped kind of pot, and you pour the liquid into one nostril and it comes out the other one, and then you do the other side. This is a great technique to clean your sinuses out. Normally, the recommendation is to use sea salt, but with this extra borax, clean the sinuses out, and it's a tremendous antifungal. And fungus infections in the sinus are a big problem. In fact, anybody who has chronic sinusitis probably has been through various bouts of antibiotics, and then it doesn't really do much for the sinus because those antibiotic use has allowed the fungus to overgrow in your body. So now you're stuck with a bigger problem. So chronic use of antibiotics for sinusitis will get you into some trouble.
And
here's a simple, easy remedy. to do. Cheap and effective. I love that.
Well, there's another remedy, but first of all, I want to say the fungus literally gets caught up in the sinus cavity because you're using the antibiotic, which kills bacteria, and often quite effectively. But sinus infections very often aren't one thing. They're a combination of this swelling, which creates this thickened, swollen tissue with very small canals connecting them. And when the tissue between the canal gets so thickened and swollen, it becomes a dense mass that doesn't allow circulation. So here you have killed the antibiotic, but the yeast is stuck in there, creating more inflammation, more what they call hyperemic or thickened tissue, and creating blockages that can be quite painful. So having a remedy like this with a neti pot at one time, and still is the main substance to put in the neti pot, is saline salt. But personally, I don't find that tremendously effective. So I get the neti pot, and then I have Lugol's iodine. Iodine is
great idea.
Yeah, iodine is very unique. It's an antiviral. It's an antifungal. It's an antibacterial, and it's a it brings down swelling. So you're using it, and it's moving in through these very constricted canals and bringing down some in the swelling. So it increases circulation into that area, which is exactly what you need. You need it open, you need it to dry out, and it also is killing the fungus. I have had so much success with neti pots and 1, 2, 3 drops of Lugol's iodine, which you can get in a health food store. You can order it online. It's a very powerful remedy for all upper respiratory and lower respiratory, but that's through a neti pot infections, and it's that's through a ventilator, and that is so powerful. Carol?
Okay. I think I want you to talk about this because all the time we're talking about various things, you often bring up alpha lipoic acid. And so I know that you are using this in your practice quite a lot. So here's another Australian who's writing about losing her sense of smell after a brain hemorrhage. And so she, after quite some time, started looking on the internet and found just what we're talking about, people sharing information, what works for them. And it was alpha lipoic acid. And so she started taking a couple a day. And after just a little while, all of a sudden she could smell again. Why would that be working? Do you have any idea why alpha lipoic acid?
You know, I read that and I'm not sure either. I can let's guess together, okay?
Okay.
One, alpha lipoic acid is a tremendous chelator.
It
binds heavy metals, and when they're bound, you're able to draw them out of the body. It's not immediate, but it's cumulative. It's incredible for the liver and makes the liver stronger and helps the liver function in all of its phases. But it also is very powerful for neurons, and it brings swelling down in neurons and helps neuron function. One of the most effective things that I've seen in my office is using alpha lipoic acid IV. I've never seen it work oral with oral capsules, although there are some good ones. There aren't many good ones. What IV, and people who have had neuropathy, diabetic neuropathy, post-surgical neuropathy in their feet, in their hands. I've seen that dissolve after so many treatments. Sometimes one or two. I've seen this miraculous case of someone who had a stroke and their arm was frozen for 2 years, came in. And I said, you know, I don't know how effective these therapies will be, but I know they'll make you healthier. So let's see what we can do. And after a strong alpha lipoic drip, her hand was moving. After I saw that, there's a song, I'm a believer. There's something so powerful about when you see something like that work so effectively, you're constantly and forever looking for the next case that will support it, improve it. And everybody is so unique. Alpha lipoic acid is good for everyone. It's particularly important after you do alpha lipoic acid to give a B vitamin injection or take a B vitamin orally, because it needs to be balanced. Its ability to work is based on working with and through B vitamins. So I recommend anybody with a neuropathy, I recommend that they use alpha lipoic acid. The exact mechanism of action with the stroke patient, your guess is as good as mine, Carol.
I know this is quite a famous story, and maybe you can remember the doctor's name, but he literally brought several patients from the brink of death from Amanita mushroom poisoning. And Amanita toxins attack the liver and cause the liver to shut down. And that's all she wrote. And he was able to get some from a researcher he knew, and he used it on a couple of patients in the hospital, and they literally recovered overnight and saved their lives, saved their livers, everything. So it's quite a remarkable supplement. That's also one other mechanism that you didn't mention is also an extremely good antioxidant. And antioxidants like vitamin C are considered, they work in the water-soluble areas of your body. And then things like vitamin E work on the oil-soluble part of your body. But alpha lipoic acid works on both sides, the fatty and the non-fatty areas. So it's quite a remarkable thing.
Yeah,
finding this quite inspiring.
You said something really important, and I want to emphasize that. There are two things right this moment, there might be more, but at this moment that I'm aware of, that are fat-soluble and water-soluble. And so they're therefore meant to work in all areas of the body. Like vitamin C, naturally, it's water-soluble. So it works in the areas of the body that are water fluid based, but not in the fat areas of the body. Okay, well, alpha lipoic acid and melatonin are the two things that are known and we understand are fat soluble and water soluble. So melatonin literally can go into every cavity and area of the brain and literally wash it out. At night, that's what your brain does. It uses melatonin to clean the brain. But alpha lipoic acid has a similar effect in that it can go through the liver, it can go into the brain and go into every area that where the neurons are, and literally act as a natural anti-inflammatory and drawing metals out of these areas. There were a couple other treatments that I saw. One of them was castor oil. And Carol, I need to ask, what do you think about that? And how would, what I know castor oil is an antifungal, but I have very little understanding of how it works.
This is really interesting. Castor oil was recommended by a psychic. And for castor oil packs, and you may have heard of that for pain relief. It's a mystery to me. I know there's a whole book written about the effectiveness of castor oil. And my sister was using it on some dark spots she got on her body, aging spots. And she just continuously put castor oil on those spots, and they lightened or even disappeared. And I've seen this come up before. Castor oil can be used on your eyelashes to help your eyelashes grow.
It's a little sticky, though.
Yeah, it is a little sticky. So what the person writing said, that she lost her sense of smell. And this person, too, said after using zinc lozenges, so maybe this was too much for her, the too much effect, but she used castor oil, one drop in each nostril, morning and evening. And I have seen this before. She said smelling raw garlic and onion 7 times per day. people have used things like this with a strong odor to sort of stimulate
yes.
the nerves to reuptake those smells. So they start with regularly trying to get your sense of smell to at least start with picking up the strongest smells. And I'm not sure about that, but I have seen that in more than one place, to regain your sense of smell, to use substances that smell strongly and regularly try to smell it to regain some smelling function.
So are there things that we should avoid during this period of time that might aggravate this problem? As I understand, aspartame could aggravate this. Sugar can aggravate it. Paints and paint thinners, smelling them, and very moldy environments can also aggravate this problem. But all of the above can aggravate fatigue and lower our energy and our energy for recuperation.
One of the things that you can do when you're exposed to things, including mold, is and all kinds of reactions to things. Last week we had Dr. Martin Teach on, who spoke about using tri-salts. It's bicarbonates of different minerals, like sodium bicarbonate, but also in tri-salts you would have magnesium, potassium. So you'd have a mixture. Here's another neutralizing thing, and it's 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar plus 1/4 teaspoon of baking soda.
Again, alkalizing.
Alkalizing.
Uh-huh.
So most of these reactions to toxins make your body very acidic, make your tissues acidic. So this is a neutralizing thing. And the thing Dr. T spoke about, again, was tri-salts. This is from a practitioner for Thailand. He's talking a lot about excess heavy metals being involved in this loss of sense of smell, and makes you wonder, because alpha lipoic acid does help bring down the heavy metal load, but he's talking about other things like lecithin can, and chlorella, and cilantro. These are some natural things that help break down the heavy metal burden. And I want to throw in here that sauna. When you do sauna and sweat, you help get rid of heavy metals. And He brought up an interesting point, and I'm not sure why this would be. The sense of smell can swing greatly depending on women's menstrual period. So it's related to hormonal changes. Now, I haven't heard that much as a complaint over the years.
No, I never heard it.
I found that very interesting. He also says fluoride is a big problem. We have fluoride in our water systems. The powers that be have used a toxic fluoride supplement and have taught us to think that this fluoride is actually protecting our bones and our teeth. And it is taken up by our bones and our teeth, but it actually makes a brittle but harder piece of bone. And now you can see in children, I saw a picture just the other day on Facebook, somebody wondering what was wrong with their young child. They had mottled teeth. So you get kind of a white, opaque plaques on your teeth, and this is from fluoride poisoning. So it's not very beautiful, but the way you can avoid fluoride is to have water that is filtered, and you have to have filters capable of taking out fluoride. Absolutely essential, because we really do not need that in our drinking water.
So another practitioner comments on, again from Bangkok, another practitioner from Bangkok comments on how all chelators can be helpful. And so if you're going to be attempting oral chelation, you want your B vitamins with it, you want your magnesium, and then the baking soda, as you said, and the vinegar. But he also talks about sugar and sugar's effect on damaging the nerves. But it's not. But he also said it's not as dangerous as aspartame or sweetenlow or diet products. And he talks about lack of balance and dietary fats are often a cause also. And he talks about taking fish oils and how important omega-3 are daily. He talks about granulated lecithin. And lecithin is an extract of soy that acts to emulsify fats. So it's almost like a natural soap going through your vein and arteries and breaking things up. And he explains how excess zinc can cause anosmia, loss of smell. But he said that in this interesting piece, although glutathione is very powerful and really helpful in chelating, in supporting chelation, it doesn't chelate and detox in and of itself, but it does help the recovery of degenerative disorders or traumatized or damaged nerves. So adding glutathione to this program can be very powerful.
He also points out where to watch for excess metals and the source of your pots and pans. The biggest source is the kind of piping that's bringing water into your house. Again, water filters before you drink and use that water, if that is indeed the case, and even doing some remodeling to update those metal fittings and things so you don't have that source. But I really thought it was interesting, wheat products and excess oils used in cooking products are acid-forming, but on top of that, it sops up the heavy metals during cooking. and feeds it to you when you're using metal frying pans. And the wheat crops with fertilizers can carry a lot of heavy metals. So interesting, we're being bombarded at all sides. He warns that anosmia can be the first, the red flag for other things, ultimately ending up these same metals attacking your metabolic processes, can lead to Alzheimer's, lupus, Parkinson's, and even MS. And this loss of smell can be one of your first alerts that your body is having trouble with this. And rather than progress to a more serious state, you have tools now that you can use to take care of it.
To intervene before it becomes something. And that's the thing that we really want to look at within ourselves, within our lifestyles, within our bodies, is that just because your knee is hurting, you don't want to just forge through, or just because you're having numbness in your hands, you don't always want to forge through. It's not that you're just too weak and you can't forge through. You really want to begin to, oh, this is a problem. It's a signal. It's signaling me. It's telling me something. And I don't understand it. So how do I go about, where do we go about looking to see or create a solution? And so often those solutions are found in our lives and our lifestyles. It really is quite remarkable to see the solutions available. And just like it was saying on about the lack of smell, sugar is a neurotoxin. So if you're exhausted, okay, so you got COVID, you got over it, but you're exhausted. You're seeking energy. You're not sleeping well, and you're seeking energy. So you're eating sugar to get you going and get you going through. And you're eating some breads to see. So first of all, the breads, as Carol mentioned, are bringing in the metals and the toxins. And the sugars are neurotoxins. So you're compounding an existing problem without meaning to, but just trying to make it through your day. So it's often and magically so surprisingly simple just to cut out sugars, just to cut out wheat. Now, I really was not aware of this before last week, but Dr. Morton Teach just, and I'm sitting here going, oh my goodness, as I'm hearing him talk.
What he said about coffee?
Coffee. He said caffeine isn't a problem. Feel free to take in your caffeine. But he said coffee is one of the worst offenders, even organic coffee, and that he makes incredible strides in people that come to him for problems just by eliminating coffee. Now, you know, this is an interesting thing, Carol. When people have had COVID, I've had three patients who have come back and they can't drink coffee anymore.
Huh.
It's the flavor's too bitter. It doesn't feel right on their tongues. It doesn't feel good in their bodies. They can drink tea with caffeine. They could drink two cups of tea, which is equivalent to a cup of coffee, but they cannot drink the coffee. And these are black tea, which are bitter. And you would think, you know, Carol, tea is known for its fungus. You know, it's known that in the drying process, it picks up a fungus. But this is the thing I wanted to ask him. So I'm going to ask you, put you right on the spot in front of everybody here. You know, coffee is boiled. Wouldn't you be killing a lot of that yeast? Wouldn't
you would think so.
I would think so.
You know what? Didn't we used to, those old percolator things?
Oh, I love them.
didn't that used to boil it? But right now, as we just, in a few minutes, pass hot water through it and do an extraction, that may not be enough exposure to inactivate anything. And maybe it's our brewing methods.
Yeah, my daughter has one of those percolators.
Yeah, in desperation during a snowstorm, I was at my daughter's and we lit a fire in the fireplace. And I heated up hot water and coffee in the fireplace.
Now that, I must admit, is serious desperation.
I said, okay, I can't face this big problem with all this snow until I have my coffee. Which really makes you wonder. I always wonder why the smell of bread is so attractive to us.
It's amazing.
Isn't it? And so I wonder if it's like some kind of resonance between the yeast you're carrying around in your body and the yeast and the bread, and they want to come together. So it forces you.
Do you know, Jack,
eat something.
You know, Jacques Pepin, he is one of the most famous chefs in the world, the French. And he said one time, he said, you know, if I didn't have to worry about my weight, if I didn't have to think about, he said, when I die, as I'm dying, I want them to bring me a fresh, crispy, warm loaf of bread and butter.
Interesting.
He said that would be my perfect last meal.
So this is really, really interesting in that I read an amazing book called Parasite Rex by Carl Zimmer many years ago, and that we're in a constant push and shove for dominance with our microbial world and the parasites and the worms and everything. But I just wonder if the yeast somehow invented that freshly baked bread to have a one-up on us.
Well, you know, it comes down to what came first, the yeast or the person or the person or the yeast. I think it's the yeast, actually.
Oh, yeah, they'll be around long after we have. Another an interesting thing we didn't cover with Dr. Teach is yeast organisms also chelate heavy metals. So it's a problem when...
No, I was not aware of that.
Yeah.
Explain that to us, would you please?
So heavy metals are sequestered by the yeast organism. So in a sense, they're actually protecting us from acute metal toxicity. And so it can be a really big problem to go after yeast organisms too aggressively, because as they fall apart, because you're poisoning the yeast organisms, it releases
the heavy metals.
Yeah. So that should be taken into account. There's a lot of yeast therapies out there, but one of the things that needs to be looked at is that heavy metal stuff.
Go on.
Oh, when you use a binder, many protocols use a binder of some sort, like charcoal. That would be helpful in mopping up those metals.
Well, you know,
as well.
I remember going to a conference many years ago, and I thought this was so outrageous. And it was one of those aha moments. You know, the microbiome acts like a cloud. It acts like a cloud along our intestines. And in order to get to the intestines to be selectively absorbed or rejected, you have to go through this cloud. And what happens is this cloud is very powerful for blocking specifically mercury, but multiple heavy metals. So I was aware that the microbiome intestinally blocked heavy metals.
Yeast colonies can occur in a lot of places, like we talked about earlier. In the sinuses is really a common area, but they can set up elsewhere in your body. Those colonies are the things that hold the heavy metals. You don't usually have yeast floating around in your bloodstream. So that would be a very unusual situation. But when you start killing all that off and your body is flooded with mycotoxins, the poop of the candida and heavy metals that they've been hanging on to, you have a huge acute assault on all your detox systems. So that's something to be concerned about. And if you're using yeast therapies, to take it easy, take it slow, and don't overwhelm your detoxification. There's an issue called Herxheimer's reaction when people do something, and you actually feel quite a lot worse because of this huge dump of mycotoxins. This is not necessarily a good thing. This means too fast, too hard, and back off.
It's interesting because once I had a patient and who came in relatively healthy, at least that's what I understood, and I asked her to get off sugar and wheat and dairy. But she could stay. I did not. I usually do not restrict coffee, but now I'm thinking about it since talking with Dr. Teach. But we spoke the next week, and I asked her how she did. And she said, just from removing sugar, wheat, and dairy, and still being able to drink coffee, she was put to bed with the most severe migraine for 3.5 days.
Mm-hmm.
And then she felt much, much better at the time we spoke. She had followed my instructions, but it's amazing. You're talking about Herxheimer's. That's the definition of a Herxheimer's. But who right. would have thought that someone would react so severely to relatively minor changes in relationship to diet? That's pretty darn powerful.
Yeast feed on sugar and alcohol and will grow like crazy. And if you suppress those two things, they start dying. So rather than think of that as a little thing, it was a big thing. And really, it was probably relative to your patient. It was probably she probably was a pretty big sugar user, I would imagine, and had a big impact pulling this off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, I see very unique Herxheimer's reactions. I see people that, headaches are very common with Herxheimer's reactions. Reactions mm-hmm. and Herxheimer's are reactions very often of the die-off of the microbiome due to the fact that there's a change. You know, Jeff Thurston, Master Supplements and Master Enzymes fellow, said something very important that I heard, and I'm still waiting to get back to him to understand. He said that you could change your microbiome in 3 days. Now, I have never heard that before. As I understand it, we're looking at quite a long journey to create that change. He said in 3 days, you could make a major change to your microbiome.
Right, and it all depends on the prebiotic, how you're feeding your microbiome. That's astounding. Mm-hmm. So I don't think he meant like suddenly in 3 days you go from illness to health, but what he meant was the kind of proportions of different organisms are changed that easily and that quickly.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah, powerful tools, what you eat.
Yeah, and we think of it as minor. I used to have on my website that that those people who are taking a pill to create change are missing the most powerful piece, and that change is created through dietary and lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So foods are the most powerful change that you could have. And I gave the example of diabetics. You give diabetics, well, first of all, this is a long story, and we only have so many minutes left, but you give diabetics a pill, and they continue to eat in the same way, and then you need to give them a stronger pill, and they continue to eat in the same way, maybe minor changes, and then you give them a stronger pill, until finally, you literally blow out their kidneys. And number one fastest growing medical institution in the country right now is dialysis centers on every corner, particularly in poor neighborhoods. So that's what we have to do, Carol. We have to start talking about how we deal with this literal national health emergency. So, Carol, I love it when it's you and me and we're talking. I always learn so much, and I have fun and I laugh.
Yes, it's always interesting.
So I want to
have all those interesting tidbits floating around in your head too.
Just a few. I seen a little in these few years of my life. Okay, thank you so much. It's always wonderful being with you, Carol.
Yeah, likewise.
I always learn. And thank you, everybody, for being here with us and coming along in our journey, exploring and learning and growing and getting healthier. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fernari, RPA, CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fernarihealth.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me. Left Hook from Redding, California. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.